What's up, you beautiful bastards? Hope you're having a fantastic Monday. Welcome back to the Philip DeFranco Show, and let's just jump into it. And the first thing we're going to talk about today is this constant problem that rears its head time and time again, and this time it happened around James Charles. And James Charles, if you don't know, is just a massive creator on this platform, and in general, one of the biggest names and faces in the world of beauty. And he popped up in big entertainment and community news because he is the latest person to have to ask his fans to stop coming to his house. Tweeting, please stop showing up at my house. I will not hug you. I will not take a photo with you, and I absolutely will not sign your palette. It is extremely disrespectful and makes me feel very unsafe in my own home. Respect people's privacy. It's really not that hard. James Charles also taking to Snapchat to say this.
If for some reason you know or have found out or done research on where me and my little brother live, do not come here because you are not invited. In fact, if you are ringing my doorbell 8 times every 3 minutes and hiding behind my garbage can, and I will call the police because that is literally harassment.
And James Charles also hits on something that it's not necessarily just the fans.
And what I really don't fucking get is the parents who know that their kids are doing this, or even worse, driving them here because they're too young to actually drive themselves.
And as far as my personal reaction to the story, it is that of a father. I'm not surprised, but I am disappointed. And the reason for that is this is not a unique story. We've covered several stories like this in the past. There are a lot of other stories out there right now that creators are scared to talk about. And they're scared for the reason that James Charles actually mentions in his Snapchat.
Sometimes when you talk about an issue, it can become a bigger issue.
And he's right on two fronts there. It can become a bigger situation because by talking about this, all of a sudden you're gonna have all these new people going, well, I wonder where James Charles lives. And all it takes is a few people that just don't understand human interaction and boundaries, and then it gets really bad. And two, there's always the possibility that a part of the audience will go, well, we made you. You should be so thankful and constantly accessible. And my response to that is, fuck no. 9 out of 10 times, if you see a creator in public, you go up to them, it's gonna be a great positive experience. But you don't just go to someone's house, it's crazy. And to the parents driving their kids to these creators' homes, you are not a cool parent for doing that. Plainly put, you are enabling harassment. And understand, that's not some abstract thinking. Those are some actual public responses to James Charles. Like, your frustration is completely understandable, but don't forget who got you to where you are. It's those same people who will keep you going or ruin you. You have them to thank for where you're living and what you're driving. It comes with the territory, kid. And another reading, I totally agree with you, but you shouldn't have showed your house to millions. This is what annoys me about YouTubers/celebrities. They show their house and then act surprised when people show up at their house. You signed your life away when you decided to become a celebrity. And my response, once again, time and time again, to that kind of mindset is no. The idea that a James Charles can put out a video where it's like, hey, look at the inside of my house, look at this pool, that turns into somehow asking for it, that it makes it James Charles's fault that someone then went the extra steps to find out where they lived and showed up unannounced, that's ridiculous. And the idea that you just have to take it, being treated not like a regular human being because some of those same people that are going to go to your home and harass you, they made you. And I say screw that kind of thinking. There is a time and a place to go up to someone. And the time is never when you're talking about that person's place of work or where they live. In previous places where we did not have proper security in place, I had someone literally walk onto my set while I was filming. I've had friends in this industry that had to move because they were either constantly being interrupted or they were scared for their safety because people kept going to their homes. I've known people in this industry that have had to homeschool their kids because people were calling the school, going to the school. It's not right, it's not okay, but unfortunately, this is something that is not going to end because while I say this to 99.9% of people that will nod their head and go, yeah, obviously, there is still going to be the fan and or enabling parent that just won't get it. Just because this ridiculous thing has become so standard that celebrities should expect it, it does not make it okay. But that's where I'm gonna leave that one. It's the story, my personal takeaway, and I pass the question off to you as far as your thoughts around this. Then, in quickie news, let's talk about an update around the California text tax. We talked about it last week. The CPUC, the California Public Utilities Commission, wanted to add a surcharge to text messages, which was a move that the FCC seemingly was not in favor of, since last week they labeled text messages an information service. Right, and that classification of information service, not telecommunication service, was a big distinction. And it appears that move and or maybe public reaction has been successful, with the CPUC announcing on Twitter that they have now canceled the vote around the text tax. My personal response to this is I understand that they were trying to change the system because the market has changed, that they're not getting as much money because people aren't using phone calls as much. But I personally agree with the FCC. I think it is an information service. And even if they put this through, I think it would have just driven more people to apps like WhatsApp or iMessage and things like that. And so I guess plainly put, I think it would have been an annoying, insufficient band-aid. And as far as what happens next, we had Assemblyman Jim Patterson say, you can bet I'll keep a watchful eye on the CPUC for future attempts to tax our text messages. But for now, we will consider the text tax canceled. And then let's talk about this situation where I don't know where to begin or how to consolidate it. It starts with Pete Davidson, Ariana Grande, Kanye West, Drake, and several others.
Actually,
we'll start on Thursday and going into the weekend, where we had Kanye West posting a ton of tweets discussing a lot of things, including his mental health, and also him blasting fellow rapper Drake. And Kanye and Drake have had this ongoing feud, which involves a lot of diss tracks, rumors, their feuds. It's a lot to unpack. It's also not the main point of what we're talking about today, but I mention it because in a series of these tweets, Kanye accuses Drake of threatening him and says that he was picking on people with mental health issues. At one point, Kim Kardashian even getting involved defending her husband, tweeting, "Drake never threatened my husband or our family. He paved the way for there to be a Drake," adding, "My husband is the most brilliant person, the most genius person that I know. He's broken so many boundaries." And as of now, we haven't seen Drake publicly respond, but he did post a series of crying, laughing emoji faces on his Instagram story. And so that's happening, and then out of left field, we have Ariana Grande tweeting, seemingly commenting on this feud and tweeting, "Guys, I know there are grown men arguing online right now, but Miley and I are dropping our beautiful new songs tonight. So if y'all could please just behave for just like a few hours so the girls can shine, that'd be so sick, thank you." With Miley Cyrus also writing, "Didn't they hear the news? War is over. Thank you, next." And so the next thing we saw is that on Saturday morning, Wes accuses Ariana of using this moment to promote her song, writing, "I know Ariana said this to be cool and didn't mean no harm, but I don't like even slightest level of slight commentary from someone I know loves and respects me. People will no longer take mental health for a joke. All this foolishness weighed on my mental health, so Ariana Grande, you know I got love for you, but until you're ready to really make sure everyone's okay, don't use me or this moment to promote a song. No one would ever choose to end up in a mental hospital and diagnosed with a mental disorder, but God chose me to publicly go through this journey and it is beautiful." Grande then responding, "With all due respect, I don't need to use anyone to promote anything, period. I was making a comment about what men were doing at the time versus women. It was a joke, which I understand now was probably insensitive. I apologize if I was in any way triggering and hope you feel well today." Then she responded to a fan who told her to retract that apology, writing, "Regardless of how I feel about a situation, I can also care about their mental health." Then going on to express how much she hates the internet before asking everyone to stop weaponizing mental health. Which then connects us to Pete Davidson, who of course has been very open about his mental health issues, the amount of bullying and harassment he's received. Also, of course, what's really important to the situation is Pete and Ariana were previously engaged. A massive amount of the harassment and bullying he's received has been from her fans since the breakup. And actually, I mean, if you look at the situation, he faced a lot of backlash even when they were together. But main point regarding Pete Davidson, we saw him jump into the situation writing, "Bravo, Kanye West, for standing up for yourself and speaking out against mental health. I can't explain to you enough how difficult and scary it is to be honest about stuff like this. We need people like Kanye. No one should ever point fingers at you for your bravery in speaking about mental health. I'm seriously disgusted." And then things seemed to escalate from there, with Pete posting a pretty alarming note on Instagram reading, "I really don't want to be on this earth anymore. I'm doing my best to stay here for you, but I actually don't know how much longer I can last. All I've ever tried to do was help people. Just remember, I told you so." And soon after posting that, he deleted his Instagram account completely. And this post was met with a ton of responses across social media from both friends and fans. We saw the likes of Jada Pinkett Smith, Kid Cudi, Megan McCain, John Cryer, Nicki Minaj all concerned. We saw Ariana Grande tweet, "Man, I'm so sorry I told a dumb joke. I really didn't mean any harm. All I want is everyone to be healthy and happy so desperately, please my God." Then writing, "I'm downstairs and I'm not going anywhere if you need anyone or anything. I know you have everyone you need and that's not me, but I'm here too." Also, people were asking, "Why aren't you just texting him?" To which he responded, "No, I couldn't because I don't have his number."
What else? How else would we like to vilify me today? Please keep going because I haven't had enough guilt at all.
We saw Machine Gun Kelly, who's a close friend of Pete, saying that he's on a plane right now to go see him. Then later in the day, it was reported that the NYPD actually sent an officer to the SNL studio to perform a wellness check on Davidson. And according to the reports, he was at work rehearsing for that night's episode of the show. Separately, an NBC representative contacted the NYPD to say that Davidson was at work and he was fine. He appeared on the show in a pre-recorded segment, as well as briefly to introduce musical guests Miley Cyrus and Mark Ronson, with Pete also eventually spotted later that night with Machine Gun Kelly. And around all this, a lot of people have been pointing to Nicki Minaj's response because she was defending Pete and Kanye, writing, "We can be so insensitive. God bless Kanye and Pete. Being flippant about mental illness speaks more about you than them. Stop saying the word love and live it. Love is an action." Also adding, "Y'all did the same thing to Mac Miller until he died. The fake bandwagon hate." And the thing is, this isn't even like the end of the chaos that was this weekend. There was this whole situation with Cardi B and Offset and people mocking him, her defending him. And obviously, while I'd love your opinion on just all of that, ultimately all of this does bring us back to the conversation around mental health. And it's something that I've said over the past few years, especially when talking about Kanye West, that makes it hard to report on Kanye West. Because Kanye has created situation after situation where he says something that is really ridiculous or indefensible. Right? Every day that Kanye had a phone or someone was putting a camera in his face, we were getting a different headline. Right? And it needs to be understood that it's not an attack on people with mental health to point out that what he's talking about there doesn't make sense. And commenting on his words or his actions are not automatically an attack on all mental health. And I think that's why we see these people arguing that it's being used as a shield and a weapon. Especially when I think a lot of people have just resigned that this is what Kanye West is going to do from now on. Right? He's really hammered home on the point that he's no longer taking his medication. Writing, "I cannot be on meds and make Watch the Throne level or Dark Fantasy level music. You don't make Runaway on medication. 6 months off meds, I can feel me again." Right? And I think that we need to be able to go, well, I think what he's saying is somewhat concerning.
concerning, right? He's beaten that classic artistic drum, right? This idea that you can't be the fantastic artist that you could be if you're taking medication to deal with your mental illness, which if there's anyone that's reading what Kanye is putting out there, please, please talk to your doctor before just stopping your medication. So I think given the new norm, pretty much anyone that's commenting on these situations, I think that it's less about Kanye. Don't make it about Kanye and make it more about the content and the actions of Kanye. That said, I also think that the Kanye West, Pete Davidson stories are somewhat different. I think, yes, both are bringing awareness to mental health issues, and I think that is admirable and fantastic. But Pete Davidson's is just so randomly vicious. Right? He got hit less and was able to manage the situation better when he mocked a veteran that lost their eye than what he received at the hands of parts of Ariana Grande's fandom. Like, Pete Davidson has been like, yo, I have mental health issues, I'm trying to deal with stuff, I've been on the receiving end of a lot of bullying, and then a good number of people were like, yeah, well, kill yourself. Right? I think it's ridiculous that he's having to deal with that. But also at the same time, I feel like another point often not brought up or considered is, you know, what about Ariana Grande's mental health? What about the backlash she has also received following the public's reaction to the story? Right? And actually, to bring it back to the whole of the situation around all the celebrities that we're talking about today, there's also a big commentary on how people act online, how both the connectivity but disconnection from their own words make people even more horrible. But with all that said, once again, I'd love to know your thoughts. There's a lot of different angles to this. And the final thing we're going to talk about today involves a word at the center of a lot of the stories this year, and that is migration. And the reason we're talking about this today is on Sunday, thousands gathered in Brussels to protest a United Nations pact to cooperate on migration. And at the center of this, you have the Global Compact for Safe, Orderly, and Regular Migration, which is a non-binding agreement setting out guidelines for humane migration practices and one that suggests increased cooperation between countries. Work on this pact began after more than 1 million migrants and refugees arrived in Europe in 2015. Then, back in 2016, all 193 UN members unanimously adopted a non-binding political declaration, this at the time being the New York Declaration for Refugees and Migrants, that pledged to uphold the rights of refugees, help them resettle, and ensure access to education and jobs. And that declaration was then split into two agreements, the Global Compact on Refugees and the Global Compact for Safe, Orderly, and Regular Migration. Then we fast forward to July of this year, where we saw all 193 UN members except for the United States agree to the Global Compact for Migration, with Rex Tillerson saying, quote, "While we will continue to engage on a number of fronts at the United Nations, in this case, we simply cannot in good faith support a process that could undermine the sovereign right of the United States to enforce our immigration laws and secure our borders." And what we ended up seeing in a vote last week is out of 193 countries, only 164 agreed to formally adopt it. And at the conference in Marrakesh, Morocco, where the vote was held, we saw UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres say, "It is clear that most developed countries need migrants across a broad spectrum of vital roles, from caring for elderly people to preventing the collapse of health services, just to mention two of them. Societies are stronger, more resilient, and enriched, not threatened by diversity." Adding, "Migration has always been with us, but in a world where it is ever more inevitable and necessary, it should be well managed and safe, not irregular and dangerous." And adding, "National policies are far more likely to succeed with international cooperation." Now, many of the countries that did not attend this conference have either decided not to sign the accord or are still deciding. The countries that have decided not to sign include the United States, Austria, Hungary, Italy, Poland, and Slovakia, while at the same time you have countries like Bulgaria and Israel that are reportedly still deciding. But with all of that said, in Europe, this pact actually set off a series of events culminating in protests in Brussels on Sunday. Last Saturday, just before the vote, the largest member of Belgium's ruling coalition, the right-wing New Flemish Alliance, they left the government in protest of their prime minister's decision to sign the pact on migration, with this ultimately leaving the prime minister as the head of a minority government. And following this move, we saw Flemish right-wing parties calling for a march in Brussels, which was initially banned by local authorities over fears of violence. However, we saw Belgium's High Court overturn that ban, citing the people's right to protest peacefully, which then brings us to yesterday, where reportedly around 5,500 people showed up for the protest, some of which carrying anti-immigrant signs, reading things like "Our people first, first our people, we have had enough, close the borders." And reportedly, while the protest was marching, they began to set off fireworks, lighting flares. Once they reached the European Commission building, reportedly they began to break windows. We've also seen some reports coming out that they attacked journalists. Reportedly, police began to ask marchers to disperse, and in response, some threw paving stones, firecrackers, whatever else was around them towards the authorities. And so on the police side, we saw them deploy tear gas, begin to use water cannons on the crowd. Reportedly, this led to 97 people being arrested, but all of them have since been released. Meanwhile, in the city center, there was a counter-protest organized by left-wing groups and charities, which reportedly gathered around 1,000 in attendance. One demonstrator, Naomi Stocker, telling the BBC, "We want to raise the alarm to show that the organizers of the other demo are fascist groups. They advertise hate and discrimination and are violent. We want to warn people and send a different message." And kind of on this note of the opposition, on Sunday during a keynote address, the Secretary General of the UN said, "The international cooperation is under fire. This is the ultimate paradox of today's world. I believe that behind this paradox, there is a huge deficit of trust. Our world is suffering from the bad case of trust deficit disorder. It is a deficit at many levels. Trust between people and political institutions, trust among countries, trust in international organizations, namely the United Nations itself," and adding, "We face enormous challenges that cannot be solved by any country on on its own. Climate change, the defining challenge of our time, migration and refugees, people on the move everywhere, the multiplication of conflicts that are increasingly interlinked and which itself is linked to newer threats of global terrorism and international criminality. And as far as my reaction to all of this, I'm not necessarily surprised, but I do find all of this interesting. Because once again, a big thing to keep in mind is this is a big reaction for a non-binding fact. It doesn't actually force these countries to take in any refugees or migrants, right? It maintains each nation's sovereign right to determine its own immigration policies. The text in it specifically says, "The Global Compact reaffirms the sovereign right of states to determine their national migration policy and their prerogative to govern migration within their jurisdiction in conformity with international law." It appears that the intent behind this is for it to be a tool to foster cooperation in a growing system of international immigration, which, I mean, there really does need to be a plan in place. According to the UN, the number of international migrants continues to increase. Last year, there were 258 million. However, what's really interesting is the number of migrants going to Europe has actually decreased since its peak in 2015. And in fact, according to the European Commission, since then, it's dropped by 90%. And it's also a situation that has proven deadly. In fact, according to the UN data, more than 60,000 migrants have died on the move since 2000, which is something the Secretary General called a source of collective shame. But with all of that said, that is the story. That is what we've seen. It will be very interesting to see what happens from here. But ultimately, I pass the question off to you. What do you think about this story? What do you think about the developments? And what do you think will happen next? And what do you want to happen next? I'd love to know your thoughts on this story and really anything I discussed today in those comments down below. And that's where I'm going to end today's show. And remember, if you like this video, my dumb face, these daily dives into the news, support the video by just hitting that like button. Also, if you're new here, you want more of these daily dives, just hit that subscribe button, ring that bell to turn on notifications. Also, if you missed the last Philip DeFranco shows you want to catch up, you can just click or tap right there to watch those. But with that said, of course, as always, my name's Philip DeFranco. You've just been filled in. I love yo faces, and I'll see you tomorrow.